Welcome back. I'm Pierre Daly, Managing Editor at AdvisorAnalyst.com, and this is Insight is Capital. Effective marketing is vital for the growth of a financial advisor's practice. In an era where 82% of prospects visit financial advisor websites and social media to learn more about them, a compelling digital presence is not just important, it's critical, it's table stakes. The financial advisory landscape is transforming rapidly, with digital-first millennials set to control over $30 trillion in assets, necessitating a fresh approach to growth. And advisors must move beyond traditional methods and embrace modern marketing strategy that leverages digital platforms. Samantha Russell, Chief Evangelist at FMG Suite, the leading all-in-one marketing technology platform solution for financial advisors, is here. Samantha is an expert in digital marketing and has a deep understanding of the unique challenges and opportunities that financial advisors face in today's competitive landscape. Her work at FMG Suite is focused on empowering advisors with the tools and knowledge they need to thrive through effective marketing. Today, we're going to talk about what's in FMG's newly released 2025 Marketing Guide for Financial Advisors. It's their latest comprehensive resource designed to help advisors navigate the ever-evolving digital world and achieve sustainable growth by attracting and retaining clients.
This is the Insight is Capital podcast.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast are those of the individual guests and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of AdvisorAnalyst.com or of our guests. This broadcast is meant to be for informational purposes only. Nothing discussed in this broadcast is intended to be considered as advice.
Samantha, I'm very excited to have this conversation with you. Thank you so much for joining me. It's great to have you on and get this chance to chat with you.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm excited to be here and dive into all things marketing.
For advisors, it's definitely the biggest nut to crack. Tell us a little bit about how you got into this very special field and what's got you excited about your work these days.
Yeah, so my background, I went to college for marketing, communications, and PR. But after school, I was in a relationship. Like so many reasons we moved to the places we do, I followed my soon-to-be husband. He was just gotten a tenure-track position at Penn State University. So we landed in Pennsylvania, and I started working at the university in alumni relations and fundraising. So I would go with the president to all of the biggest donors, and talk with them about gifting opportunities. And while I was doing that, my husband was building a piece of software that would be released eventually called 20 over 10. So that was a digital marketing platform for financial advisors.
Oh, wow.
And he and his partner actually had come up with the idea after there was a big OSJ that had hired them to build a website for them, and they wanted to find an advisor lookup tool on the website. So he did a lot of websites, graphic design, and the website he built for them was gorgeous. But when he was adding all these advisor sites in the lookup tool, they were terrible. And he said, why are their websites so bad? And he learned all about just like how cost prohibitive it was, compliance. So he's like, there has to be a better way. We're going to make websites for advisors. So he built this platform. He convinced me to be employee number one to come and run marketing. And we were a completely remote company from the beginning. This is back in late 2014. And we launched, and it quickly flopped because we wanted advisors to build their own websites.
Right.
Which was not a great idea. And so we pivoted and we started offering the app, like writing the copy for the website, building it for them, hired a team of designers, writers, and 20 over 10 grew and grew. We ended up developing a lead platform called Lead Pilot, email marketing, all the different components. We sold that business. It was acquired by FMG, who I now have the pleasure of being chief evangelist for, just 4 years ago. And I have been in this industry ever since. And, you know, really the reason why I became such a vocal upfront person instead of behind the scenes was out of necessity. So we had $0 to market, which I know for many advisors listening, they're a small practice. They don't have big budgets, right? And so I was kind of learning strategies and sharing them as I went, kind of a build in public mentality, if you will. And advisors really loved it. They loved that I was sharing, hey, this is working for me. You should try this, or this is a flop. Maybe don't do that. And they kind of came along for the ride. I built up a big following, and you know, I'm really committed to still doing that. So at FMG now, a big part of my job is coming on shows like this or being at events. Right. teaching people the best strategies, and then also bringing it back to our team at FMG, anything I'm seeing or trends we're paying attention to, so we can build better products and services to help advisors with their marketing. So as you mentioned, FMG has a ton of different tools, services for advisors, whether you want to do it your own and use our tools or hire our team to do it all for you.
Excellent. That's an amazing story, Samantha. I you don't get the title of chief evangelist for nothing, right? I mean, you're out pounding the pavement. That's incredible. So definitely it's the biggest nut to crack. Are advisors taking this seriously?
Yes. I mean, I think some of the interesting things I think about is if you look at the reasons why, like the number one challenge that advisors will say they have, it's not how should I invest or, you know, who do I hire? Right. I mean, sometimes you have those things, but it's how do I grow? That's what they want to know. And we see numbers that tell us that growth is stagnant in a lot of ways. M&A is huge, but, you know, people just growing organically, it's really, really difficult. And it's only become more difficult since COVID because consumers, you no longer are just competing in your local area. Your competition is nationwide, and consumers right. would rather choose an advisor who specializes in working with people like them than just choose between the five local businesses in their town. So it's only gotten more difficult, but if you do crack the nut, your ability to grow is only even more powerful because now you can serve people, you know, again, depending on where you're licensed, anywhere in the U.S.
Right.
These digital means. And the consumer, I mean, my advisor lives in Florida. I live in Pennsylvania. The consumers are used to just meeting with their advisor now digitally as well. So things have drastically changed in the last 4 years.
I was intrigued by your conversation recently with Josh Brown on The Unlock.
Yep.
And one of the parts of your conversation sort of revolved around the idea that advisors are being found now by investors, by clients via ChatGPT and other, you know, AI search engines like Perplexity and Claude. And what have you found particularly interesting around that? Like, how does that happen? Now, obviously you can't go and you know, post on ChatGPT and get found that way. It's not like a forum or a website. It relies obviously on the search engine result showing up. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so really how this came to be, even me really just putting all the pieces together, was a couple years ago, there was a Google CEO that went to TechCrunch, which is a huge tech conference, and he slipped up. He said something he wasn't supposed to say, but he mentioned that Google was really closely monitoring the fact that almost 40% of a certain cohort generationally, people under 30, were looking, when they were searching, they were first opening TikTok or Instagram before right. they were going to Google or Bing or whatever.
So social first, yeah.
So that is called social searching, right? So you right. want to go find a restaurant, you want to find a hotel. This generation is looking for those visual results, and they're looking for what we call user-generated content. So they don't want to hear what the brand has to say about itself or the business. They want to see what other people who've used the business have to say about the business. So that was the first thing. And I was paying attention to that. This came out just months before AI really hit the scene in the way that we now know, like ChatGPT, right? So that happens and I'm paying attention to it. And then ChatGPT comes out and immediately I was like, this is going to completely change everything for so many reasons, but Google's going to have to start showing people results at the top of the Google search bar, which they now do, right? Give you those AI summaries, or they won't compete and they'll shoot themselves in the foot and people will leave there. So now what we see happening is, even if someone, okay, they're not starting with social first, let's say they go to Google, 2/3 of those Google searches end without a click. People get the answer
yeah.
and they leave. Then you have a whole nother cohort of people who they're not using Google, they're not using social search, they're going directly to, you know, ChatGPT, Perplexity. They're searching, they're getting those answers. And then again, they're leaving and making more choices. So in all of these situations, the old way no longer works of how
right.
people were trying to, you know, be found. So what does work? I mean, that's what people want to know. And
to clarify, like in the beginning, ChatGPT didn't have web search. It was just, you know, large language model. You could ask it questions and it would take the information it knew from before 2021 right. and give that to you. So that, you know, it was relying on old data. But since then, of course, we've seen with the, you know, evolution of ChatGPT, and of course, Perplexity has been on the search scene for a while now too. I think they were probably the first to be on the scene with search. But now there is the search function where you can search the web in ChatGPT. So people are using it, of course. It's right there in the toolbar. Right?
Yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, there's a lot of people who will listen to this and they'll think to themselves, So Josh and I talked in the episode you're referencing about a Washington Post article that said, you know, if we're trying to make a metaphor, basically, Google would be the Titanic right before it sunk. Right. And I don't think we need to go that far. I mean, I think that their ability to pivot will happen. I think they've taken longer than they needed to because they're trying to figure out their ads business and the revenue there. And that's a big component of it. But the reason I bring this up, there were so many comments on that article of people saying, you know, I'm 65 or I'm 70 and I still use Google every day. I don't use anything else. And old habits die hard. You know, it takes a while to start using a new tool, but the younger you are, the quicker you'll change
because
you're used to these new tools coming out. And so the other thing to think about, if you're an advisor, you're probably not trying to sign on many clients who are 70. You're trying to sign on clients who are in their 40s and 50s, you know, maybe early 60s. And so you're thinking about where are they spending their time and how are they finding things? If you're an advisor listening to this and you're thinking, well, I want ChatGPT to show me as a result, let's think about how you get chosen.
Right.
First of all, the AI tool is going to look at the individual conversations they've had with that searcher in the past. So if they've told them a lot of things about them, you know, being a woman and, you know, maybe feminism and certain things being important to them, the results that they're going to get might be advisors who specialize in working with women, and that it's clear that the AI tool can see that. Having a niche is really important. Having information on your website, yes, is important, but also these AI tools are not just searching the web. They're pulling in data, and this will become a huge part of it going forward, is the social, anything out there, right? A YouTube channel, anything they can find that is connected to you. So there's a couple things to think about. Number one is the more, again, we hear this all the time in marketing, but the more specific you can be with who you serve, the better your chances of showing up in these tools. Number two, when you're talking about your business or, you know, yourself online, being consistent in the way that you talk about it. So if you're Samantha Russell, don't sometimes be Sam Russell, sometimes be Sammy Russell, sometimes be Sammy Joe. It's hard for these tools to string all that together. So, you know, your handle or your name on social platforms, try to be as consistent as you can with how you refer to yourself in your business. That would be another tip. And then the third thing is, you know, with marketing, you cannot ever really become complacent. You have to constantly be putting fresh information out there because that is how, you know, whether it's Google, the old way with SEO, whether it's the search algorithms, content becomes outdated and the algorithms don't pick it up anymore after a very short period of time. So you have to constantly be putting out new things.
Amazing. I mean, that's a great segue into, you know, my first question to you about your guide. And of course, that's the importance of having a high performing website. What are the key elements that advisors should focus on to create a website that converts visitors into clients as opposed to, you know, the traditional, you know, 1% conversion rate?
So, you know, the first thing I like to remind everybody is if you want to attract people to you, think of a magnet. In order for a magnet to work and for things to be, for it to attract, it has one side that attracts, but what does the other side have to do for it to work? It has to repel.
Right.
You are not repelling anyone. You cannot attract. Your magnet will not work. So if I take a look at your messaging and I feel like, yeah, they work with everyone, you're already failed. How many websites say we work with individuals, families, and businesses? So you work with anyone that has a heartbeat. That is immediately I'm going to give you an F on your marketing.
Yeah.
And the problem and the reason is if you even just look at clothing, right? It used to be there was like a few main big clothing providers, people would go. Now it's like maybe you like sustainable clothing and you're a fisherman and there's these, they have UV protection clothes, right? You got athleisure, elevated athleisure. We've got name brand. We've got name brand, but it's subtle for the ultra high net worth. And, you know, if you just look at any market, if you look at kombucha, how many different kombuchas are there? People want highly individualized experiences, and it's no different with their financial advisor. Everybody wants things that are curated to them, their choices, their preferences, and their place in life. And it's what makes you referable, because
right. You
might not be a good fit for me, but I would go tell my friend, hey, you own a small business, you live in Pennsylvania, you're trying to sell your business in the next 5 years, I just found an advisor who works with people like you, that should be the person you work with. So that would be the number one mistake, is if I land on your website and I can't tell within 5 seconds, we have something called the 5 second test, who you are, what you do, and who you do it for, and whether I'm a good fit or not, you're already failing. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is to remember that people come to your website when finally whatever problem it is that has been bothering them about their finances becomes so big they can't stop. They have to pay attention to it now, right? People don't want to deal with their finances in most cases. They put it off. Maybe it's 11 o'clock at night. They gotten into an argument with their spouse and they're like, we have to have an advisor. Look at this tax bill, whatever it is. So now they're on your website. Don't make them write a book to tell you why they want to meet with you, right? Like, don't make them your name, their phone number, their email, their shoe size. I mean, I see these forms sometimes. It should be as simple as book a meeting on our calendar and we'll set up a consultation and 15 minutes talk about whether we're a good fit or not. And if you're very clear with your, you know, minimum AUM, with the type of client you serve, you won't have to worry about people who aren't a good fit booking a time.
Yeah, they'll disqualify themselves if they're not, and they'll qualify themselves if they are. I was just thinking while you were talking as well, like, you know, it could be, I mean, for the website, You know, in terms of, you know, answering those questions to visitors, I mean, you know, it's great to have a blog. It's great to have, you know, like a frequently asked questions section, a chatbot, if you want to go as far as that, if you can, that pre-answers a lot of questions. But I was just thinking, you know, what, if, like, for an advisor thinking about, you know, what should I put on my website that would attract the search engines, that would attract, you know, prospective clients that I want to work with.
Mm-hmm.
What are the most exciting, you know, 3 to 5 problems you've dealt with in the last couple of years? Like, who are the clients you're most excited about working? What did you do for them?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting.
And do case studies.
I also think people are always thinking about getting the most amount of traffic versus the most, you know, how can we find the best quality leads and what are they searching for? So there's a great example. There's an advisor we worked with, and he worked with executives in Minnesota who, you know, had certain specific problems or things they were dealing with. And he had this article, "Can capital gains push me into a higher tax bracket?" And he saw that it was getting a lot of traction, visitors. And so he just kept making it better and better, made it longer, added a video. In 1 month, he had 37 people visit his site from that blog. Well, that's 37. That doesn't sound like a lot.
Yeah.
But 10 people booked a meeting. So he had added a meeting scheduler widget right in this blog post because it was so targeted. And he had 10 executives who lived in Minnesota who Googled that question and found him, book a meeting, right? And so it's not about quantity. It's about quality. And you know, the more specific you can be with the kinds of questions you're answering in your content,
right,
the more that the right people will find you. So an FAQ section is great, like you mentioned, you know, being, again, hyper-specific in the problems that people have that lead them to you. And then, yeah, absolutely. Case studies are great because people want to always know, okay, what is this actually going to look like? And either they've worked with an advisor before and they're on the hunt for one because it was a bad experience.
Right.
Or they've never worked with one before. So you need to really, a case study lets you lay it out there. Hey, Jane and Jeff had this problem. This is why they came to work with us. By working together, we did these things. This is what we prioritize. And here's now what we're, you know, the outcomes we're working towards. Obviously, you got to watch compliance language and all that good stuff. But
right.
That can be so, so, so powerful in allowing someone to picture themselves being helped by you.
And with prospective clients, you know, they tend to go in search of new advisor relationships when they're in transition, when something has happened, an event has occurred in their lives that makes them want to get the answers to a new problem or new problems that they're having or new concerns that they want to address down the line. So you want to be there at that moment when, you know, they either have an estate question or transition, business transition questions. How do I do it? You know, do you know anybody? Is there anybody? I mean, those are the kinds of specific, you know, so getting particular is critical, right? It's getting very particular and understanding where, like maybe look back on your last 10 new clients or your last, 15 new clients and say, how did you find me? How did you come to the conclusion that I was the advisor you wanted to work with?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just one thing I always like to keep in mind is a lot of people in their marketing talk about investments and retirement planning.
Yeah.
Those are two kind of far away in the future things. Most people are not touching their investments every year and they're thinking, okay, retirement's happening 10, 20, 30 years from now. As human beings, if we were that good about doing things for our future self, we'd all be in the best shape of our life, eating all the right foods, working out. We are way more distracted and pay attention to immediate problems. So taxes come around every single year. We all have to deal with them. Advisors who talk about taxes, even if they're not dealing with the taxes, but they're saying, hey, we'll coordinate with your CPA. We'll play point. It's going to be part of what we consider. People want to hear that because they're dealing with it, you know? So you want to think about, like, maybe there's an advisor I know, almost all their marketing has to do with allowing you to live the life you want now and not just put it off for the future. So they talk about travel. They talk about big aspirational goals or starting a business. They're really focused on working with people in their late 30s to early 50s. And with that group, again, they don't want to just think about, how are you going to help me for retirement in 30 years? How are you making my life better and adding value today?
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot more fun to do that too, I think.
Wow.
You know, and it's true. I mean, if you go to most advisor websites, you know, that's what they've got on there. You know, they've sort of got this boilerplate.
We'll help you plan a retirement.
Yeah. Thank you. So let's change gears. Because I want to talk about social, and in your guide, you highlight LinkedIn as a crucial platform for building meaningful professional relationships. But of course, it doesn't stop at LinkedIn. You should be on whatever, as many social platforms as you can. But what are some of the practical strategies advisors should use to optimize their presence on LinkedIn and effectively engage with their network? Like personalization, like taking, I just thought, one thing I thought about was, you know, like taking a little bit more time to personalize connection requests or accepting, you know, like greeting somebody who has accepted your connection request is valuable, but so many people don't do it.
Right. I mean, so the reason we really go all in on LinkedIn and the guide is a couple things. Number one, LinkedIn shows the highest quality conversions for you know, they have the highest affluence of any social user base. And the highest conversions of any. The other thing is that out of all the platforms, that is the one that can be adopted by the most advisors. So there's still a lot of advisors that can't use a lot of the other platforms. And so that's the one that we focus
on. That's the safest one. Yeah.
But that, again, the tenets, you know, the foundation there applies anywhere. So a few things to think about. Number one is if you're trying to grow on any of these platforms, a lot of people just are waiting for other people to reach out to them. I have 42,000 plus followers on LinkedIn. I spent probably 3 years of my life, no, not 3 years, maybe two, where every week I would go in and I would send a connection request to any single person I met with and any single person I emailed with that week. So every Friday I'd go through my email inbox and my calendar and I'd send a request proactively. That helped me grow so much by thousands of connections. And the reason that's important is even if you never see that person again, now they're going to see all the good content you post, right? You're
right.
Going to be top of mind. Even if it's like your building contractor. Well, who knows who they know, right? So you don't eliminate people just because you don't think they're your target audience. We're trying to expand our network there. But then the second thing is, you do want to be targeted about, you know, who you then reach out to. So you've got the people that you're just capitalizing on, you know them. What I like to do is, let's say I was an advisor working with physicians. I would use LinkedIn's tool to look up a hospital network, let's say the Mayo Clinic or their residency programs. And I would look, you can Google the, or not Google, but go into LinkedIn, search for that. Once you find the business, there's a button you can press where you can see every single person who said they're employed there.
Right.
And you drill down even further and say, are they a physician, a nurse, depending on who you want to target. And then there's a little button where you can say, has posted recently. So now we not only see employees or your target demographic of that group, but people who posted recently. And why that's important is I would then go and on, you know, Dr. Joe, who I don't know, he posts something, I would leave a comment, because what's going to happen is, even though we're not connected, we have no connection, he doesn't know me, he's going to say, who's Samantha Russell? And then click on my page, right? When I leave a comment, everybody notices who comments on their posts. He's going to go click and look at it and see, oh, she helps doctors like me with financial planning and debt reduction. I'm paying a little bit of attention to that. I didn't ask him for anything. I didn't leave a sales pitch. I just left a comment. So comments are really the currency of social media. And it doesn't matter what platform that you're on. You know, if you're on Instagram and you're trying to grow a, you know, travel account, which is something I'm doing right now for fun to kind of hack Instagram. We just set up a new account called Jolly Good Travel. So every day I'm in there looking at either people who follow a bunch of other travel accounts, like moms of families or other travel creators, and I'm leaving comments on all their posts because they're all going to go back and check me out. This is a time-consuming thing, but it's the number one thing most people miss. They just post, and they don't think at all about the social interaction aspect of it.
And it's a social network, right? I mean, I think that gets that, you know, that's a great point, because it gets taken for granted. When you go to LinkedIn and you see that people liked your post, for starters, and never mind comments, but when you see that people like your post, that like, you know, you do get triggered by it, whether you like to admit it or not.
The biggest, you know, behavioral psychologist and addiction specialist in the world have equated the, when you get the little notification that someone left a comment or liked your post, it's like it's a true dopamine hit to your brain. So who wouldn't want, you know, their prospects to associate them with the dopamine hit? You know, if you if someone you really want to work with, rather than even asking them, just by the, if I left three comments in a row, 3 weeks in a row on somebody's post, they're going to be like, who is this really nice thing?
And then they're going to look at your profile, and they're going to,
And if they need someone to help them with marketing, they're going to think, wow, she didn't ask for anything. She's being really nice. And she solved the problem of this pain point that I have. And they're going to pay attention. And so that's really, I mean, if there's a secret to social media, that's it. But the problem is it's time consuming. So you really, it doesn't cost anything but your time, which is the most valuable resource we have. So you really just have to be committed to doing it. And you can outsource the content. You know, we're both in the business of creating content. You have somebody writing really great pieces of content. You can't outsource those little commenting. I mean, you could try, but it's not going to be in your voice. It won't be the same.
But it could be something as simple, Samantha. It could be something as simple as somebody, you know, posts about a particular issue or problem or, you know, and then you reply and say, you know, check this out. And it's a link to a great article about the same subject that solved, you know, that helps them to think about the problem in another way or solve the situation that they might be having. It could be as simple as that. It doesn't have to be, you know, some
response.
So
that's another great reason to have those blogs, is blogs are evergreen in that, you know, anytime somebody's like, hey, do you have any, like for me, do you have any recommendations for filming video on my iPhone? Here's a blog. Do you have any recommendations for how to, you know, get set up with YouTube? Here's a blog. Do you like, it makes it so nice to be able to do that. Good point.
So you recommend a strategic, and I say strategic because obviously everybody's using email and texting, but you recommend a strategic mix of email and texting for client and prospect communications. And I know also on FMG Suite, you have tools that address that, but just in general, how can advisors effectively leverage both channels to deepen their relationships, and what kind of content is, you know, would you recommend for each communication method?
Yeah. So to unpack it, you know, first of all, there's a company called Y Charts, and they did a study multiple years in a row that found, and there's been other studies that have found it too, but I just know because I'm I've read the whole thing, that the number one reason that somebody leaves their advisor is for feeling like they weren't communicated with enough. And yet there are still so many firms out there that do not have a regular email drip set up. So start there, you know, even if it's just a weekly little newsletter where you say, here's three articles we read this week that you probably saw in the headlines too, and here's our take on it.
Yeah,
my advisor does that. So it could be, you know, a Wall Street Journal article, and then he summarizes it kind of like, either this is, you know, no big deal, don't worry about it, or only these clients need to pay attention to it. But it's just a simple way to say, I'm reading, I'm staying up on all this stuff, I'm, you know, in your corner. The next thing is to start getting in the habit of creating a prospect list. So I see so many people who still don't have a single person saved to a prospect list. they rip email content on.
Yeah.
So they might have them and they hard sell them, but that's not what we're talking about here. We're saying that you have a list of prospects that you've become aware of and you send them valuable information. So, hey, when Silicon Valley Bank, you know, was collapsing and everybody's freaking out, you're sending them something like, if you're a couple and you're in a high yield savings account at Marcus or Ally or any of these banks, you have a higher, you know, you can have up to 500,000 because it's FDI insured for 250 per person, like something like that. Valuable. It doesn't matter who you are. A prospect would love to get it. So get in the habit of doing that and having a weekly, I really suggest weekly, but at a minimum bi-weekly cadence. And don't worry that someone's going to say, that's too much. Don't clog up my inbox. Because they can unsubscribe from your marketing emails and still get your one-on-one, you know, emails. If that's something that you struggle with, we do at FMG offer a program where we'll write either breaking news content or regular emails for you. But, you know, I can't tell you how many advisors I've worked with who will be like, I didn't really think that was that important, Samantha. And this woman just the other day, she targets small business owners. So she has a list of small business owner prospects. She had a woman who'd been reading her emails for 5 years. And she just sold her business and is like,
amazing.
Okay, I sold my business and I'm ready to work with you now, right? Because the woman had just been giving away valuable info. So that's the first thing. With texting, it's still sort of a newer medium, and not everybody can. We have something called My Rep Chat, MRC, that allows you to text compliantly with clients. And we're in the process of baking out a lot more email components. So let's say there's breaking news about a bank collapsing and you don't want to just email, you want to be able to send a text, you could. But right now, what we're seeing advisors use it for that's really great is things like DocuSigns. So you send an email, you send an email, you send an email, nobody ever completes it. We find when you text them and you're like, hey, that DocuSign's in your inbox, can you fill it out real quick? All of a sudden, you're getting it back within, on average, 4 or 5 minutes. So texting is just a nice way to personalize it and everybody's got their phone with them all the time. We've all been kind of conditioned to not live in our inbox anymore, but we still pay attention to our text messages throughout the day. So that's a really good one for client communication. I wouldn't use it for prospecting at this point. I think
there's a lot. I mean, there's a lot of phishing going on and things like that.
Yeah.
I think the prospect list is interesting. I mean, that's definitely something probably gets taken for granted, right? And there's so many tools out there though, like where you could automate that, where you could, you know, and the key obviously is to personalize it as much as you can in order to get the engagement that you're looking for, that you're hoping for. But I can see where
into groups, then it makes it so much easier. So we really recommend, you know, again, if you have a niche audience, you target business owners, and then maybe you have another group that just all happens to be families with young children, things like that. It's so much easier. I mean, FMG, we have a massive content library. So if you're working with a provider like us, it makes people might be thinking, what the heck am I going to send every week? We create that for you so you can send it out. But again, if you're listening to this and you don't know, I'm sure you're reading every week things. You could also just put a link to the things you're reading with a huge point.
What about like best practices for things like subject lines, email subject lines? I know that, you know, you know, we sometimes have huge subject lines, or we try to shorten them as much as we can in our marketing. But what do you have any like consistent rule that
So I would say think of the hook, whether it's the first line of your social post or the email of your subject or the subject line of your email as the gate, and people can't see what's beyond the gate. And if they don't like what you wrote enough to open the gate, you might as well have not sent it. So people right. pay so much attention to the body copy, the content, but they don't pay enough attention to the hook. So with hooks, it's really all about cutting through the noise and capturing attention. And so, you know, sometimes it can be a little, what's the word? Like, I see a lot of people use, it'll be like newsletter number 205. Right? Not going to open
that. Okay.
But if instead you say, you know, fires in California, and you, like, let's say there's three things you talk about in your newsletter every week, three news articles, and you say what those three things are as like a preview,
right.
you'll be more likely to open that. You know, Silicon Valley Bank collapse, do you need to be worried? Right?
Yeah.
And you're just going to tell them, no, they don't, but they'll open it. And so you're not, I'm not trying to be, a caution to be clickbaity, but think of when you're on your email, in your email inbox, or you're scrolling social media, what do you pay attention to? Messages that are specific to you. If you don't think it applies to you, you tune it right out.
Right.
So that's why having more targeted lists is good, right? If you have content that's specific for families with kids, you can be even more specific than the subject line. But yeah, the really paying attention to the hook and, you know, just getting somebody to click on it is important. You can Google or go to ChatGPT and ask for help with subject lines. There's so many great tools out there. I think the biggest thing to pay attention to is once you start actually caring about the subject line, then look at your open rates and see what your audience does right. open versus others. And that will give you some insight. And, you know, people, sender name is really important. You know, if people know that you're only going to send them good stuff, after a while, the subject line becomes less relevant. They'll say, oh, it's an email from Samantha. I'm going to open it. So,
yeah.
you know, the subject line is really crucial for new people who are starting learning to trust you. But once you have their trust, their likelihood to keep opening your stuff will be high.
So now events, I want to talk about events. What kind of events can advisors create that are both memorable and engaging and that provide value, but also drive business growth, but without putting so much at stake, like where, you know, you're so invested in the outcome that, yeah. that it supersedes, you know, the fun of it, the enjoyment yeah. and the engagement.
So there's two different kinds of events I would say are the best, most successful to do. And so I'll just talk about those because we could talk about a million different ones, but for the yeah. interest of time. So the first would be digital online events where the audience is coming to learn something that is hyper specific to them. So you're going to do it like a Zoom webinar. You're going to invite people. Let me give you some examples. There's a firm I know, they invite a local FBI agent. And they invited all of their clients
yeah.
and their clients, if their clients were older, they would say, you can invite your children. If their clients were younger, they would say, you can invite your parents. And they were talking about scams targeting senior citizens. So what does the text look like? What does the phone call sound like? What does the email look like? And both the kids and the parents loved it, obviously for various reasons. And the FBI agent is really the one on stage having to deliver, right? So inviting a subject matter expert is a great way to not feel like all the pressure's on you. You have to put this big presentation together. So you can invite a state planning attorney to say, here are the top five things we see families arguing about because these things didn't get done. People want to hear that. Like, what should we be paying attention to? You invite a CPA on and you say, here are the five things that I see most common business owners making, the biggest mistakes they're making with their tax prep. People who are a small business owner. So you want to be specific about who it's for and then get a subject matter expert in who would deliver some great value. Obviously, if you're not as scared to talk, you could do it yourself too. But that would be, you know, number one. The second type of event is something that's more fun, that's in person. I personally think if you're going to make it educational, you should make it online because then you can invite the most people possible.
Right.
If you're going to make it an in-person event, I typically would lean more towards the fun ones because for someone to show up and give up their time, they're going to want to have a good time. They don't want to just listen to a lecture. So some ones we've seen work really well, invite a photographer and tell your clients, hey, we're going to help you get those Christmas cards done or those family pictures done this year. Here's a link, book a 15-minute time slot. You can come with your kids, your grandkids, and then have some snacks on site. You can collect everybody's email address and contact info because the photographer needs to get in touch with all of them. It's a great way to meet multiple generations of family. And everybody wants family photos, and it's such a thing we have to do every year. So that always is really, really popular. But when you're there, you're not trying to talk to them.
Right.
You're facilitating a fun event. So if it's supposed to be a fun event, let it be a fun event. And if it's more educational, make it really specific to the audience and work with a subject matter expert that will take some of that load off of you. Even with your invitation, one of the secret tips I love to tell people to do is send it out, then wait a couple days, and then send out a follow-up saying, hey, so many of you are saying you're excited about this event and you want to know if you can ask a friend or a family member to come. So, you know, you can each pick three people to bring, depending on what the event is. It creates this air of exclusivity, and you're not starting off by saying, here's the invite, and invite everyone you know, like, such a different vibe.
First of all, divest yourself of the outcome. Just focus on making it as interesting and exciting and fun as possible, and you know, valuable. But look at, you know, what kind of event would I be compelled to go to, right? And then make it that. You know, the problem with marketing always is that when there's money involved, like expense, you know, you start to immediately focus, okay, I'm going to spend money on this event, but then what's the ROI? You know, like you suddenly become focused on what if it doesn't, you know, what if it crashes? What if I spend, you know, $15,000 on this event, on this thing for, you know, business development, and it doesn't work. I'm out 15 grand and nothing happened. And then, you know, you might actually, before you even get to the event, you might decide I'm not going to do it. It's too risky or it's too much.
Yeah, especially if you're online events are great because the cost is minimal.
Cost is, yeah, exactly.
And especially if you're, you know, you pair with somebody who's willing to give up their time without being paid, which a lot of people are if they think it's good. I mean, and for something like a client event, you know, you could do something as simple as maybe you love wine and you love teaching people about wine. So you say, you know, you're going to buy some bottles of wine, you're going to do a wine tasting. Don't think of it as how many people are going to talk with me about their investments. Think of it as how many people are going to come, have a good time, and now be aware of my brand. It's top of the funnel marketing, which is almost like a billboard. It's not about deep conversation, deep expertise. We are just getting people associated. Like, so different events have different purposes, for sure. And you cannot think of each event, you know, obviously you shouldn't be spending $20,000 on every event thinking, okay, well, I didn't get any clients from that. But there's a lot you can do for a very minimal expense too.
When you're an advisor, because you're running a business and you've got to bring in, you know, you want to bring in new clients and you know, accept new clients, there's this closing mentality, right? There's this, you know, always be closing, ABC. But one of the best things I ever heard, just to add to our conversation, if it does, is always be opening relationships, always be starting, you know, new lines of communication. Don't worry about where they go, you know, because if they're going to go your way, they're going to go your way. If the conversations are going to tilt in favor of somebody becoming your client, they're going to tilt in that direction naturally. But if you try to do it in an unnatural way where you're always, you know, doing the hard sell doesn't work.
Well, and I think too, like we talk in this business all the time, this is a relationship-based business. My clients are like family. Do you start it off making it feel transactional, or do you start it off by making it feel like they're family? You know, if you really don't want it to feel transactional, then building trust is all about doing something for someone without the expectation you're going to get anything in return. And so, you know, I know that's not the way business is, but doing something for someone could be something as simple as sharing valuable information in a one-to-many approach. And that's why content marketing at its core is so effective for inbound marketing or inbound leads, because you're telling people something of value to them to teach them something without any expectation of getting anything in return, so that when they are finally ready to work with someone, they will think of you because you've been the one guiding them, leading the way already.
Yeah. So let go a little bit, let go of that idea that something has to come out of everything that you do. Okay. Let's change gears. Last but not least, by far video is one of the best ways to personalize your brand and reach more people. What kind of videos should advisors be thinking of creating? What are you finding, in your experience, Samantha, that's working best?
Yeah. So, I mean, definitely people can tell if someone wants to be there or not. So I don't want you to make a video just because you feel like you're checking a box and then you're cringing to watch it and everyone's cringing to watch it too. So you need to, whether it's you or someone on your team, find someone who's going to have some good energy. A lot of times to get started, it can be something as simple as having a conversation with a colleague that you would have anyways and just recording it. So, you know, you sit there with your colleague and you're talking about what's happening in the market, strategies you might be doing for your clients. Turn a camera on.
Yeah.
Record it with no intention of even sharing it, but just see what that energy feels like, how, what kinds of conversations are you having? And then maybe you can clip some of it and turn it into clips that you share on social media. Short form is really the best for social media. For higher conversions, you know, YouTube is great. But I'm at a very, you know, I think the thing that I'm always trying to explain to people is that whether a baby's 9 months old and the parents are at a restaurant and they're putting a tablet in front of them, or someone's 90 years old and they're in their nursing home and someone's saying, let's watch the symphony orchestra, people are watching video. And it's just the medium that has the highest conversion because it's the most personal. So for you as an advisor, if you never show your face, people never hear your voice, again, building that trust with the new prospect can be really hard. And again, as people are now hiring advisors that are not just in their local area, that they have the opportunity to meet in person, video allows you to break that wall and see if someone talks with their hands like I do, you know, hear their voice, yeah, see their face. And there's something called the mirror exposure effect that tells us the more we are exposed to something, just by nature of exposure, the more we're likely to rate that we like it or trust it. So having your face show up in people's feeds over and over again, hearing your voice is really going to build that bridge. If you're, you know, nervous about getting started, there's a lot of companies that can help you make those initial videos so you don't have to go it alone. But some of the highest converting, you know, videos I've seen are just shot on a smartphone or someone using a tool like Veed or Loom. So it doesn't have to be a high production setup.
Yeah. So there really isn't the hurdles. It's just getting started.
Yeah. The only hurdle is you.
Yeah. Well, that's always the case, right? We're always getting in our own way.
I've seen people do really interesting things. There's an advisor I know, and he really just works with people who are either just about to retire. He navigates that for them, and then once they're retired. So he has a video series, and he interviewed a pickleball pro. He interviewed the librarian about like a history session. He interviewed the local historian about, you know, artifacts and things from the area. Yeah. And so it's not even financial planning related. It's stuff that he knows his clients would want to watch that's interesting.
Yeah.
And it's all in that little town that they live in. And then they went from being videos to like in person, but then they record a part of it. So think outside the box. Just like, what would the people you want to serve want to watch?
Amazing. Where's the best place? I mean, there's so many ways. There's so many places to begin, you know, to begin to think that way and you know, get started. But the key is just getting started, like pick one thing and just do it.
One of my favorite quotes I tell everybody is, if you wait until you think you're ready to do it, then you started too late. Like,
yeah,
you start when you're not ready and it's going to be crappy the first few times and you can only get better, because nobody becomes a professional golfer by picking up a club day one, right? They practice to get better and better. The only way to get good at video is to create videos. Like, there's no other way, and your first videos will be bad. So just be prepared for that. I mean, if I go back and look at the first videos I ever made, but I love that. I love that I can see the evolution. And who cares? I mean, who cares if your video is bad? What? It's not like you're going to lose a client because of it.
Yeah. You're the only one. It's just moving forward and doing it. And now, if you really don't like what you did the first, you know, the first 10 times, you can delete it.
Live. You're not live. You're not on NBC, guys. Yeah. Oh, it's okay.
That's it. Samantha, before we end our conversation, do you have any parting thoughts?
If anybody has a question about anything, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn, like we talked about.
Okay, and what are your handles? What's your LinkedIn handle? What's your
LinkedIn would be the one I would suggest. It's Samantha C. Russell. And I'm not as active on Twitter/X as I used to be, so I'd say LinkedIn is the best one. And then if you want to learn more about FMG and how we can help you, it's fmgsuite.com. And again, we have everything from websites to social media platforms and tools to the regular email cadences to our full Do It For Me program, where people listen to this and then they go, I don't want to do all that. Can you just do it for me?
Right.
Absolutely. So yeah. But if somebody has a specific question about something, seriously, please reach out. I actually love those questions because they turn into future content for me. So keep them coming.
Fantastic. And we talked about the 2025 marketing guide for advisors. We're going to put a link in the show notes so that advisors watching this can get their hands on it.
Yes.
They can visit your page, get the download. It's a terrific. It's 31 pages, right? I mean, it's a really in-depth report.
We try to not just make it philosophical, but really every single page, from whether you're just starting or you've been doing it and you want a level up growth tip, they're really, really tangible, practical things. So, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're a marketing novice or an expert, if anybody would say that they are, there's something in there for you, which that was really important to our team to make sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a terrific guide. Get your hands on it. Samantha, thank you so much for your incredibly valuable time. I think advisors watching this will get a lot out of it. And thank you so much for your insight. It's been terrific.
Thank you.